Good morning and welcome. My name is Brian Field, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum with today's guest speaker, Cy Montgomery. Our speaker today has been described by the Boston Globe as part Indiana Jones and part Emily Dickinson. She is a prolific author and writes extensively about the natural world and our connection with it. Some nature authors write about global issues affecting the biosphere. Our guest writes portraits of individual organisms, and her insights help us develop deeper understanding of and empathy with the organisms she describes. In this way, we become more sensitive to our own actions and their impacts on her subjects and the greater environment around us. Ladies and gentlemen, it is with the greatest of pleasure that I introduce to you Cy Montgomery.
Thanks so much. Well, I'd like to tell you about someone who I met in March of 2011. Her name was Athena. And if she stood up, she would have been only about 4 feet tall, but she weighed only 40 pounds. And she had a beak like a parrot and venom like a snake and could shoot ink like an old-fashioned pen. And she could pour her baggy, boneless body through an opening the size of an orange and could change color and shape in an instant. Because Athena was a giant Pacific octopus. And she changed my life. When I first met her, I went to the New England Aquarium with an assignment for a magazine from Orion Magazine. And I asked the keeper if I could go behind the scenes and actually meet her. So he opened up the lid to her tank. And of course, you need a lid on your octopus tank, those who are considering a nice home octopus, because they will get out and they will go places and do stuff. So he opens the heavy lid to the tank, and immediately she slid over, oozing away from her lair, and I could see her eyes lock onto our faces. And the next thing I knew, her arms were boiling up out of the water, reaching for mine, and I plunged my hands and arms into the freezing cold 47-degree salt water, and her suckers were all over my hands and arms, tasting and plucking at my skin. And I later realized not everyone would like this. But I did, because I realized not only is she touching me, she was tasting me. She was knowing me in a way that no one had ever known before. Now, it was cold, and it was slimy, and I also realized that when I went home, I was going to have to explain these hickeys all over me to my husband. But I wasn't at all afraid. I was, in fact, completely elated, because I felt that this glorious being was just as curious about me as I was about her. And I knew that she wasn't afraid either. And how did I know? Because beneath my touch, she turned white. And white is the color of a relaxed octopus. They can change color in 0.7 seconds. They can cover themselves with spots or stripes. I think they could almost do plaids. They actually can become invisible against a checkerboard, although the edges are not quite as crisp. But, you know, I can talk to you about how I knew she wasn't frightened, how I knew she was curious, but this is something that for many years has made scientists and philosophers nervous talking about animal minds. Now, all of us who live with animals, who have dogs or cats or birds or turtles, or even many of us who have fish, we can feel that other mind there. We can look into the face of an animal and see a cognizant gaze. But until recently, science and philosophy didn't want to recognize the existence of other minds, not even those of chimps, until within my lifetime. Now, Jane Goodall, as you all probably know, was the person who probably more than anyone else dissolved that solid barrier between people and animals. But let's face it, a chimpanzee shares 99% of our genetic material. You look into the face of a chimp, and, you know, there's the guy that took you to the prom, right? They are so closely related to us, you can get a blood transfusion from a chimp, but not so with an octopus. Now, octopuses are mollusks. And who else is a mollusk? Well, clams, snails. We don't think of mollusks as having minds. But this was exactly what I was after when I wanted to meet Athena. I wanted to meet the mind of a mollusk. And the minute I touched her, I felt this was going to indeed be possible. This was the start of an octopus odyssey that lasted for 3 years, resulted in 2 books, caused me to discover the sea, which is most of our planet, and inspired me to become a scuba diver, and introduced me to some of the most extraordinary people. Vertebrates are a story of the odyssey, too. I met people who could see the dreams of electric eels. I met a woman who tamed 12-foot-long anacondas who are capable of eating a jaguar. And these animals, who used to be very frightened of humans, would slither up and put their heads in her lap. I met people who could train fish to do stuff that I couldn't train my border collie to do. And no fault of the border collie, entirely my fault. And all of these relationships were revelations to me. And these experiences changed my life forever. But let's get back to the octopuses, who are the main stars of the story, and take a look at just how different these creatures are from us. Now, there are 250-plus different kinds of octopuses, from half-inch-long little guys that weigh a gram to the Dumbo octopus you may have heard of, who has these lovely fins on the side of the mantle that make it look like Dumbo from the cartoon. There are octopuses that glow in the dark. There are octopuses that almost are see-through. The largest of all the species is the giant Pacific octopus, and most of these can get to over 100 pounds in the wild, although in years past, they've been known to get to 300 pounds with an arm span of 32 feet. These are big animals. And these are the kinds that we know the best, the giant Pacific. If you go to any aquarium, if they have an octopus, it is probably going to be the giant Pacific octopus, and that was the kind that Athena was. Well, you would have to go to outer space or to science fiction to find an animal more alien, more unlike us, than an octopus. We go head, body, limbs. You look at an octopus, and the thing that looks like it's their head, that big round thing, that's not their head. They go body, head, limbs. And their mouths are conveniently located in their armpits. Their mouths have a beak, which looks just like the beak of a parrot. And beside the beak are usually 2 venom glands. So their drool can be very, very toxic. The 2 kinds of venom that the giant Pacific octopus possesses, one can dissolve flesh and the other is a neurotoxin. But it is not by any means the most toxic venom of any octopus. The most toxic that we know of is the beautiful blue ring octopus of Australia. And you find an alarming number of these in tide pools. You often don't even know you've been bitten until you notice you're not breathing. And there's not a whole lot anyone can do for you because there's no antivenom. All they can do for you at the hospital is support your body's functions before everything just shuts down. Octopus's blood is different from ours. They have blue blood because the oxygen-carrying component of their blood is not iron like ours, but copper. And they have 3 hearts. They're capable of shocking strength. They're suckers, the suckers that were covering my arms and hands when I first met Athena, can lift in some cases 30 pounds, and a giant Pacific octopus has 1,600 of them. So one expert actually calculated that to break the hold of the common octopus, which is the kind that everyone eats in Greece, if one of those guys has a hold of you in the water, to break their hold would require a quarter ton of force. They're extremely strong, but they are even more dexterous than they are strong, if you can imagine this. An octopus can untie knots tied in surgical silk. And we know this because in some settings, folks have given an octopus an operation and been sewn up. And the next morning, the veterinarian comes in, and to his horror, all the surgical silk is lying on the bottom of the aquarium because the animal untied it. They have a pincer grip. They can open jars. They can put things together. They can take things apart. And so this shows us that not only do these shape-shifting, color-changing animals have an alien superpower, but they're also really smart. And they're smart in ways that we appreciate. They are, for example, highly individual. And this is reflected in the names that their aquarius give them. Athena, the goddess of war and wisdom, was a feisty octopus. And she had earned her name from Bill Murthy, her keeper. But other octopuses I have met have also earned theirs, such as the one who lived in Seattle Aquarium, who they named Emily Dickinson, because she was so shy, she never came out from under the filter. And they finally had to let her go in the Sound. But then there was Leisure Suit Larry. And those of you who lived through the 70s, you know what Leisure Suit Larry did. His arms were all over you, and the minute you peeled one arm off, two more arms would go on. There was another one named Lucretia McEvil, and she dismantled everything in her tank night after night after night. Well, Athena was not at all like her predecessor and not at all like the octopus who came after her, who came all too soon. Unfortunately, giant Pacific octopuses only live 3 to 5 years. And when I first met Athena, I was so excited about getting to know her. I was hoping to go back and back and back and really know this animal. I wanted her to be able to look in my face and realize who I was. But I'd only seen her 3 different times before I got the terrible news that she had died. But I was invited to meet her successor, whose name was Octavia. So usually what happens is when an octopus gets old, they show signs of aging. They actually get what looks like dementia in humans. And a new young octopus grows up behind the scenes. When I say a young octopus, they hatch out of eggs the size of a grain of rice. So when I say a young octopus, this may be an octopus who may already be a year old or 2 years old, but younger than the octopus they have on display. But when Athena suddenly died, showing no signs of aging, Bill, the aquarist, had to rush out and get another one, because it is said that an aquarium without an octopus is like plum pudding with no plum. So had to get an octopus. So he ordered one. You can't do this on Amazon, but he ordered someone to go out and get one in the Pacific. They're shipped in a plastic bag. You pick them up at the FedEx terminal. I actually went to pick up one of the octopuses one time. And this one had been growing up in the wild for quite a while. Her name was Octavia. And Octavia was quite different because of her background of growing up in the wild. Her ability to camouflage was amazing. She had much more of this talent than any of her predecessors, I was told. Now, octopuses put chameleons to shame. They can change color in 0.7 seconds, and they can assume over 50 different patterns depending on the species. They have all these different kinds of cells, which are called chromatophores, that control what color they become. They can also iridesce, and some of them can glow in the dark. And almost all of these chromatophores are under voluntary control. So just think of this, just to camouflage the eye area, which can turn colors, which can show a starburst pattern, which can create an eye bar. 5 million chromatophores control just the color around the eye. And the octopus is thinking about a lot of this. And Octavia was fantastic at this because she had learned to be wary. An octopus in the open sea is a mollusk without a shell. Now, if you're a clam or if you're a snail, you have this protective shell. And it also means that you don't have to move very fast. You can just kind of hang out, and your shell is going to protect you against most things that want to eat you. But imagine that you're an octopus. You have no shell. Everyone wants to eat you, and everyone does. People, birds, whales, sharks, fish, other octopus. So this is probably, in fact, what sculpts the octopus's intelligence. It has to be aware of all these predators that want to eat them and the different strategies they might use. And at the same time, the octopus has very Catholic tastes. And they have been recorded eating otters, seabirds, opening all kinds of clams. They have killed sharks. So they're thinking about the strategies that their predators and their prey are using all the time. And it makes them very wary, and it makes them very canny. And Octavia, having grown up for quite a while in the wild, was very wary of humans. So the first time I met her, she wanted nothing to do with me. I dangled a fish on the end of some tongs through the water, and she didn't even send out an arm to get it. She didn't want to look at me. She didn't want to come over. The second time I went, I went with my friend Elizabeth Marshall Thomas, who lives here in Peterborough, and the octopus wanted nothing to do with us until at the very end of the afternoon, it looked like she was going to reach out one arm very gingerly, and Liz put out her finger. Liz was then a pack-a-day smoker, and the minute they touched each other, they both withdrew, because Liz, you just viscerally will withdraw when someone tries to put slimy suckers on you, and Octavia withdrew because she could taste the nicotine, not just on the surface of Liz's skin, but probably in her blood. But the next time I went, there was a change. In the morning, Octavia again did not want to come. But then we were offering her a fish on the end of long tongs, and all of a sudden she started grabbing the tongs, and then she grabbed me and started to pull. And quickly I found myself bent in half like a half-open book, and I realized she's pulling me into her tank. And this was not going to work very well. The tank, which is almost 600 gallons, it's actually been vastly enlarged now, but then it was over 600 gallons, but you can't comfortably fit a person in that tank. So, but I wasn't afraid. I could feel her suckers creating hickeys. I could feel the blood rising to the surface of my skin, but I didn't feel any aggression. I felt curiosity. And this was really good. Now, most octopuses are very curious, and this is a sign of higher minds. Another sign of curiosity and of higher minds is they love to play. And they love to play so much that there's an enrichment manual for octopus keepers, just like there is one for zookeepers who are taking care of the chimps and the monkeys and keeping the lion from being tired and preventing the polar bear from becoming bored. You have to make sure that your octopus is occupied. So the enrichment manual suggests you give them the same toys you might give to your children. They love to play with Legos. They will take them apart and sometimes put them together. You know what else they love is Mr. Potato Head. And sometimes, when they get done playing with Mr. Potato Head's eyes, for example, they'll hand them off to one of their tank mates, like the sea star who was seen walking around with Mr. Potato's two eyes stuck between his arms, looking all googly-eyed and very, very cute. Well, at the New England Aquarium, to keep our octopuses occupied, the staff went to an inventor with many patents to his name, Wilson Menashe, who worked for the Arthur D. Little Corporation, and asked him to design special brain toys for the octopus. And so what he came up with was a series of cubes, plexiglass cubes, with different locks. The first cube had one kind of lock, and Bill would put a live crab, the octopus's favorite toy, in there and lock the box. And very quickly, the octopus figured out how to unlock that. But then he would put that box inside a different box with a different lock. The octopus had to unlock two different locks. Quickly learned how to do that. And then a third box came to play with two utterly new locks on that. So the octopus had to unlock four different kinds of locks. And every octopus figured it out. But you know how I was saying how individual they are? Well, this was something that you could see in some of their strategies. For example, Guinevere, who I never met, I actually have her beak at home though. Guinevere was an impetuous octopus. She was the first octopus that Bill had when he came on board at the New England Aquarium. And she learned how to unlock the boxes, but one day she was really hungry, and instead of unlocking the box, she crushed it. She crushed it and created a crack, not a huge crack, but big enough that she could get her arm in and pull the crab out. Well, after she died of old age, Truman, a very laid-back, happy octopus, replaced her. He also learned how to unlock the boxes. But one day, Bill decided to give Truman a special treat. He put two crabs inside the inner box, and the crabs, being crabby, decided to fight. And Truman got so excited that instead of unlocking the box, he flowed in his whole body inside the box. And those folks who were at the aquarium that day got to see an octopus in a box. But interestingly, he had actually flowed inside the space between the outer box and the inner box. That's how amazing and flexible they are. Well, back to Octavia. I want to share with you what happened the week after she grabbed me. Now, I had done this article that I told you about for Orion Nature Quarterly, and Living on Earth Radio wanted to do a piece on the intelligence of octopuses after reading the article, and so they asked if I would meet them at the aquarium and if I would introduce them to Octavia. Now, I didn't know her very well, so I wasn't sure what was going to happen, but it was fabulous. There were six of us there who actually had arms in the tank, and she was so active, and she was latching onto us, tasting us, changing color. We were feeding her. And by the way, how do you feed an octopus? Well, you don't just shove it into their armpits where their mouth is, the same way you wouldn't shove an ice cream cone down your throat. You put it at the end of the arm. And they don't then take the arm and put it in their mouth. What they do is, remember, the suckers can taste, all the skin can taste, but particularly the sense is exquisitely developed in the suckers. So they enjoy passing from sucker to sucker to sucker to sucker the delicious fish, like you would lick an ice cream cone, all the way down the arm till it disappears as if on a conveyor belt into the mouth. So we're watching this happening, and we're feeling her skin. We're watching the color change. We're drowning in the sensation and spectacle. But remember, there's six of us looking at her. Six of us have our eyes on her and our arms in the tank, and we went to give her another fish, and the bucket was gone. Right out from under us, she had stolen the bucket of fish. And by the way, she wasn't even eating the fish. She was just playing with the bucket, and I think she was laughing at us. They are really smart animals, and people often ask me, well, you know, Are they as smart as a six-year-old child? Are they as smart as a dog? Are they as smart as a pig? And I understand why people want to compare one thing to another that we know and understand. But as Henry Beston said in The Outermost House, the animal should not be measured by man. An octopus might well ask of us, trying to find out how smart we are, well, how many different colors can your severed arm turn in 0.7 seconds, and then decide that we were very stupid indeed because we couldn't do it? Well, somehow, Octavia consented to befriend us, even though we had given her ample evidence to look at our stupidity. And I've got to tell you, having someone like that look up at you and recognize you, it changes your understanding of consciousness. It changes your feeling about friendship. It profoundly changes who you are. And I should tell you, too, that this is not something in my imagination. Jennifer Mather, who is a psychologist based in Lethbridge, Canada, has tested to see whether octopuses recognize individual humans, and they very certainly do. The way she did this test was she divided volunteers into two groups, and they dressed identically. And one group always fed their octopus a delicious fish, and the other identically dressed group always touched the octopus with a bristly stick. And very quickly, even when those volunteers left their fish at home and did not bring their stick, the octopuses learned to move toward those who had fed them and to move away from those who had touched them with the bristly stick. And often those who moved away first took their funnel with which they jet through the sea and blasted that person in the face with freezing cold water. Well, that funnel is quite a useful thing to have on an octopus. Not only does it let you move rapidly through the sea, but it's also great for cleaning the front of your den. Now, those of us who are going to be doing garden work after we leave today, those of us who are going to be raking leaves all too soon, we know it's important to keep your front yard nice. Well, an octopus can often be seen blowing detritus away from the front of their den. Sometimes they gather things to put in front of their den, like, you know, little lawn dwarves. And who knows what appeals to the individual octopus. But that jet can be used like a leaf blower, but it also can be used to solicit play. And Ronald Anderson, who's a colleague of Jennifer Mather's, once saw an octopus using its jet to essentially bounce a ball. He had given the octopus, for a completely other experiment, some pill bottles that would float. And what the octopus started doing, and he watched the octopus do this more than 20 times, the octopus would use his jet to shoot that pill bottle into the jet stream of the filter, realize that the filter would come back to a specific place where the octopus would then wait, ready with its jet, to do it again, and do it again, like bouncing a ball. That is play. And I have seen octopuses use their jet to solicit play with people, similar to when you see a little kid who will be in the pool and splash their friend to get them to play. I was with my friend Krista, who's a volunteer at the aquarium, later became an employee, and as a special treat, she brought her twin brother, who has pervasive developmental disorder, as a surprise behind the scenes to meet the octopuses. And Danny loved octopuses and had read a lot about them, but some of what he'd read made him scared of them. He had seen those iconic pen drawings of an octopus attacking a giant boat with its arms curled up on the mast. So he was fascinated, but he was also scared. And we were petting Octavia and enjoying being with her and wanted him to enjoy it too, but he was shaking and he was scared, and she didn't want to touch him. She felt that fear. But then she broke the ice. She blasted him in the face with freezing cold salt water, and he thought this was hilarious. He was totally calm after that. He plunged his hands in, and then she reached forward and greeted him and played with him for the rest of our time together. And it's something Danny and I will never forget. So what's it like to interact with somebody like this, someone who has a distinct personality, who recognizes you as someone special. Now, I'm going to just read a short description from Wilson interacting with Athena to give you a little bit of an idea of what it might be like. Once Athena finishes eating her fish, she plays gently with Wilson's hands and forearms. Occasionally, the tendril-like tip of an arm curls slowly up to his elbows, but almost lazily. With me, her suckers had felt exploratory and insistent, but with Wilson, she's completely relaxed. And as I look at the man and the octopus touching each other, they remind me of a happy older couple, many years into a loving marriage, tenderly holding hands. And I have felt a special bond with these octopuses. It's amazing when you consider how different our brains are. For example, you know what our brain looks like? It looks like a walnut with its shell off. We have four lobes. An octopus has, depending on how you count the lobes and what species it is, between 50 and 75. The octopus's brain is not in its skull, but it is wrapped around the animal's throat. And most amazing of all, 3/5 of the neurons are not even in the brain. They are in the arms, which is why a severed octopus arm can go off and do stuff. I mean, it can't live for long because it's separated from the brain, but it can hunt and capture prey. So what is the mind of an animal like this? And how privileged, can you imagine how privileged I felt to touch minds like this? Well, our life cycles are just as different as our brains. Humans have babies when we're young, we have multiple opportunities to reproduce, and we live to an old age. But octopuses know. They only live 3 to 5 years, and that's the outside for most species. There's one that's known to live a little longer than the giant Pacific, but a 5-year-old octopus is ancient. And they only reproduce once at the very end of their lives. Now, usually, a wild octopus will begin to lay eggs after having mated, but like chickens and like people, you can lay eggs even if you haven't had a chance to mate, and this is what began to happen with Octavia one day. She began to create these beautiful chains of eggs, each the size of a grain of rice, and she would weave these unseen into these chains, and she would cement them to the ceiling and the walls of her lair. Now, alas, none of these were ever going to hatch, because she didn't have a chance to mate. However, I did get a chance to see octopuses mate. And for those of you who like steamy sex scenes, there is one in my book. I went on February 14 to the octopus blind date at the Seattle Aquarium with the full blessings of my husband to watch 2 giant Pacific octopuses have sex. And it is steamy. I mean, think of this. There are 6 hearts beating as one. There are 16 arms. They are covered with grasping, tasting suckers. There's a lot of lube going on. And as I began describing this to my friend Jody Simpson on a train as we were going to visit the Oxners in New York, I noticed that the entire train car had grown completely silent. But Octavia never had that opportunity, but laid eggs nonetheless. And every day you'd go in and there would be more eggs. And she assiduously cleaned them. She assiduously used her funnel to keep any detritus off of them. She stayed on those eggs to the point that she, if she'd been wild, would never go out to hunt. A wild octopus who has laid eggs does not eat again. Bill would hand her food on the edge of the end of a grabber, but no more would she come to the surface to look at us. No more would she touch us or taste us. In the wild, her eggs would have hatched in 6 to 8 months, depending on the water temperature. But 6 months went by, and 8 months went by, and of course her eggs weren't going to hatch. She hung in. She's still alive until 10 months had passed. And it was after 10 months that one day I went in and I noticed, oh my gosh, she's got a horrible eye infection. Her body's breaking down. She is near death. And Bill decided it would be best to move her off exhibit so that she wouldn't have all these people walking by, looking at her, flashing lights. It would be calmer for her to be able to live out her days as most octopuses spend their time in a dark den. Well, he tried to get his friend, Darshan, who's a volunteer there, to help him urge her into a net so we could move her. But no one had ever moved an adult giant Pacific octopus out of one tank into another. And Darshan couldn't get her to budge. Even though she was old and she was sick, she was still extremely strong. But what happened next deeply moved me. Bill reached into the tank, and even though she had not touched him or tasted him or seen him in 10 months, the minute she tasted her old friend's hand, she moved right into the net. Not only did she remember Bill, but she trusted him. And a few days later, I came to the aquarium to say goodbye to my old friend. And I was only seeing her once a week, unlike Bill. I didn't know that she'd recognize me. But when we opened the lid to her tank, she came floating right up. I was with Wilson Menashe, who would come in every Wednesday with me. And she grasped onto him and to me with her arms and looked right into our faces. And we offered her a fish, but she dropped it. She did not come up for the fish. She came up for our company, and she died shortly after that. So I don't know what she thought of me, but I do know she recognized me, and I do know she enjoyed my company. And I strongly feel this is not anthropomorphism. In 2012, some of the best-known neuroscientists, neuroanatomists in the world gathered in Cambridge, England, and signed a document called the Cambridge Declaration on Consciousness. And they stated that most mammals and birds, and certainly some invertebrates, and they listed octopus, have the neural substrate necessary to generate consciousness. I feel very strongly that these animals were conscious, that they had thoughts and feelings, and getting to know them expanded forever my heart and my mind and my understanding of what it is to think and to feel and to know. Thank you.
Thank you, Simon Gorey.